Welcome to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. According to economists at Rhode Island College, who produce an annual summer job forecast for teenagers, there's an abundance of opportunities. And for many teens, a summer job can serve as their entry into the world of work and financial literacy. What are the best summer employment options for teens? Our first guest is Ken Coleman, a career expert, an author, and the host of The Ken Coleman Show, a nationally syndicated radio program. Ken, welcome to All Sides.
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So once upon a time, you know, a summer job, even my first summer job, babysitting and, you know, lawn care. So how have times changed for teenagers in their first ever job?
Well, you know, it's funny. Some things haven't changed that much. You know, some of the best summer jobs right now, interestingly enough, are in the restaurant and leisure space because we are seeing that the activity by consumers has gotten back to pre-pandemic levels. But the problem is that restaurants, we talk about amusement parks here, hotels, mm-hmm. when you have certain hourly positions, so whether it be parking cars, you know, doing kind of basic menial task in any of those places that are hourly wages, the organizations in that leisure and hospitality space still need people. And the reality is that the bar for getting in is a lot less than it used to be. And I remember early on working as a busboy, but now if you've got good people skills, you'd be surprised how a 16, 17-year-old can get a waiter job and do quite well on tips. And then now we're seeing dog walking, dog sitting, exploding, even adults. I shared a story on the Ken Coleman Show recently of a young student in New York City who had just graduated with her master's degree and was looking for opportunities, hadn't found anything, and began to walk dogs, and now makes over six figures in Manhattan walking dogs. And so as we see convenience type roles, meaning it's not convenient maybe for the dog owner, it's not convenient for someone to say, hey, I want to get this delivered. There's a kid in my neighborhood that's picking up glass bottles and is being paid to pick up people's glass bottles and recycle them. It's extraordinary. Another story in my neck of the woods here in the Nashville, Tennessee area. A kid was just advertising on our neighborhood Facebook page, is crushing it, power washing garbage cans. For young people, where there is a need and where it is not convenient for someone, and you can come in, meet the need because it's not convenient for them, you'd be surprised at how you can get paid.
So you're talking about that, you know, creating the dog walking business, power washing garbage cans, that's becoming an entrepreneur. Are you seeing more teenagers deciding to take that route rather than having a schedule where I have to be, I'm going to work at the zoo, I'm going to work at the snack shop with popcorn every day?
No question. And one of the reasons is because if you look at, you know, I still feel young, but I'm not young. So I'm 48. So if we go back and we look at what summer jobs looked like, for people my age, you were working 8-hour days, but now kids are so overprogrammed. It's just our culture. So here's what I mean. So I've got two boys. I've got a rising sophomore and a rising senior, and they both play football. And I don't know if it's this way in the North, but in the South, football is a religion. And so my boys, both of them,
we tend to like soccer. We like soccer a little more here, but you know, football has its place.
The point is, sports is a big deal in American society. And so at the high school level, both my boys, as an example, Aaron, today were up at 6 a.m. And they were at their school doing training, and they will be in weight and conditioning training for 2 to 3 hours this morning. They'll have a few hours off, and then they'll have afternoon practice. So where does a kid have time to work? So you've got the overprogramming as they're doing extracurriculars, things of that nature during the summer. And so now they have limited time. So that's one factor. The other factor is, these kids, they kind of want the job that fits their lifestyle. And that's just changed the American culture. That's a parenting problem. You know, we've allowed kids to try to figure out what they want. Instead of going, this is what you need to do, go work. And so you've got all of that. Plus we've got the entrepreneurial spirit that is now happening because of YouTube. And so kids are now going, I see kids that I can identify with making really good money on YouTube. And so they correctly say, Why not me? And so that's a factor as well. So the traditional job isn't the first thing that pops up in today's teens' minds.
But companies need some teens to take those traditional jobs. There's a high demand for lifeguards this summer. What other positions are in high demand?
Again, I mentioned wait staff and, mm-hmm. Any kind of support staff at restaurants. If a kid wants to make money right now, that's where I'd be going. You probably get hired on the spot. The days of I go in, hand a resume, and I do an interview, and then I wait 3 or 4 days. I don't think that's the environment. And, so there's working in kitchens, restaurant. I mean, restaurants is where I would start first. That's where the massive need is. But again, you mentioned lifeguard, same type of situation. I'll give you other examples. Your local gyms, your golf courses, they're looking for laborers who can do a lot of things that need to be done for the basic operation, and kids aren't lining up for this. So again, in my neighborhood, we have a golf course there, and one of my son's buddies, I ran into him at the golf course the other day. What's he doing? He's cleaning golf carts and cleaning golf clubs when you come off the course. He's doing all kinds of other, gopher type tasks, if you will, mm-hmm. around the course. And he's making $13 an hour. Let me tell you something. That's good money. And so you're just looking for areas that have high levels of service, customer service, where they need someone to step in the gap and do a lot of just basic tasks. And you can be trained quickly. And if you have a good spirit, and you get along well with others, you're going to get the job.
Do you think that restaurants or golf courses are allowing for, you don't have to work an 8-hour shift, or they'll take you if you want to give them 4 or 6 hours because they need it?
I think they're flexible because they've got a need, mm-hmm. And right now they're like, we need help. I can't tell you how many restaurants you walk in today's world and you're just, the service isn't what it used to be. It's not because they're not good people. You just don't have enough people. And so, I know of a very, I'll give you another example because I like to try to give you real examples. Very nice resort in the area of Nashville that just opened up probably about a year ago. They can't even open up their main dining room because they can't get wait staff and even support chefs. Okay. So there's such a demand right now for a lot of positions in that hospitality and leisure customer service facing type jobs. And so if I'm a teen, I'm a parent of teens, I don't think you have to look hard in today's world.
And here in Ohio, you have to be 14 to obtain a work permit. So I'm sure that every state has different ways of how teenagers can work. Yeah. What are the job prospects looking like for the younger kids, 14 to 16?
Yeah. So, again, you're seeing bagging groceries, in our neighborhood, Kroger, you can work at Kroger. You've got some opportunities at fast food places where, again, if you can get that work permit and they need somebody to fill a role, you're going to see a lot of opportunities there. One of my first jobs, I was 14, and this is back in the day when you didn't have to have a work permit. You just went and worked. Mm-hmm. And I worked for a greenhouse and garden center, watering plants, this is not highly skilled labor we're talking about. And a kid who's responsible can water. And I watered plants for like hours on end. I would scrub the algae off of the concrete when they were getting ready to set a greenhouse. I would pull giant black tarps by myself, one little bit at a time, scaling in between two greenhouses. A lot of parents today would be scared of that. Mm. Oh, my baby's going to fall through. But, back that day, it was like, yeah. And I made $4.25 an hour and was thrilled about it. Those type of jobs for those younger kids, it's going to be basic task, fill this role. This is what we want you to do, and you do it. But they're all over the place.
You mentioned $4.25 an hour. So let's talk about the pay. So in 2019, the median hourly pay for teenagers was $11.50. Now it's $14 an hour. So that's the median for and across the country, $14 an hour for teenagers. Can pools and camps, can amusement parks, can they afford that? $14 an hour for a bunch of teenagers?
Yeah, that's a good question. And the answer is some can, some can't. Mm-hmm. It's going to really squeeze your summer camps, which are running on a super tight budget, most of them. Now, I will also tell you, in the camp world, in the neighborhood pool world, just like there is in other industries, you got your beer budget, you got your wine budget and your champagne budget as it relates to offerings. So your high-end premium camps that are charging a lot of money, Well, then they can afford that. But your camps that are usually running on a tight budget and they're keeping expenses low, it's pricing them out. There's no question about it. And that's the real tension, is because we've seen wage pressures, fancy phrase for when we see, by the way, the federal minimum wage, just to make sure that your listeners understand this, there's been no raise in the federal minimum wage. That's always a big hot button issue between Democrats and Republicans. Oh, we need to raise the federal minimum wage. And most of the time, well, not most of the time, every time, conservatives go, well, no, let's let the free market decide that. And the Democrats, they howl and say, that's not just. But here's where we are, okay? We came out of the pandemic in 2020, and you saw Target and Walmart, to name two massive companies, lead the way. And they voluntarily raised their company minimum wage. Had nothing to do with the federal law. And when they did it, you saw what happened, Aaron. I mean, it was kind of, hey, everybody else is doing it. And they set the tone. They set the bar. And so other companies said, well, we got to do something about it. And so then Burger King, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Wendy's, you know, everybody has to start doing this. And so what happened was that led to a real spike in inflation and now a stubborn stay of inflation because of what economists call wage pressures. And so it becomes a tension where companies now have to decide, okay, well, I got to pay a kid $14 an hour. And what companies do almost every time, Aaron, is they pass that cost on to you, and your Whopper combo costs a whole lot more, and that starts to squeeze your budget. Instead of going, well, wait a second, in times like these, do we pay our CEO less? You know, do we take a little bit less profit margin? But these companies are in the game for profit, and they answer to stockholders. And so you didn't ask me that, but that's a real economic window right now as to what we're seeing. And so it's good for these young kids that they're making $14 an hour. And yet it's part of a real inflationary squeeze on household budgets. Plus, as you said, mom and pop stores, mom and pop restaurants, camps, and so forth and so on. So it's a really interesting economy that we're in.
And there's such a shortage of lifeguards. Just as an example, New York City had to push the wages of lifeguards to $20 an hour. That's what they're looking for, just to get enough lifeguards to open all their pools.
Right. Which is extraordinary, you know, because then who, so how do they, this is the $1 million question, or millions of dollars of questions here. How do they then offset that? You know,
they're going to have to charge to get into the pool instead of it being a free resource. There you go.
Boom. And now who does that affect?
Right.
That affects families that, quite frankly, shouldn't have to pay for the pool if it's a community pool or a public pool. You know, so it's just, it's a really interesting world that we're in right now. And at some point, something has to give.
We are talking about what it's like to be a teenager and get your first job, that first summer job, and what did it teach you? And listeners, we'd like you to join the conversation. Listeners, we want you to tell us about your first summer job that you had when you were a teen. What did it teach you about money and about the world of work? So join our conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. We're talking about the best summer employment options for teens and the lessons that can be learned about the world of work and financial literacy this hour. Still with us is Ken Coleman, career expert, author, and host of The Ken Coleman Show, a nationally syndicated radio program. Thanks again for being here, Ken.
Thanks for having me, Amy. I appreciate it.
And joining us now is Jason Savage, a teacher at Thomas Worthington High School. He's been teaching business classes for nearly 10 years. Jason, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want you to weigh in. What was your first summer job as a teen, and what did it teach you about money and about the world of work? Or if you have a teen right now looking for a summer job, maybe call and tell us that story. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Jason, in the first segment, Ken and I were talking about this idea of getting a job versus becoming an entrepreneur. Are you seeing in your high school students them wanting to do this entrepreneurship idea?
In listening, Ken and I are close to the same age. I'm a couple years older. And while he is definitely accurate, you are seeing much more in the entrepreneurial space. There's still kids in the traditional food service, like restaurants, fast foods, doing lawn care, things like that. But yes, the entrepreneurial has really taken over. There's a friend of my son's who buys Jordans, Air Jordans. He personalizes them and then he sells them to people. And he's actually built a quite a nice business that way. That same son is also a hockey player. And we've had years and years of video clips of him playing hockey. And I had no way to organize this. And I was voicing this to one of my students. And one of my students said, well, I have a business where I actually make highlight videos. I can take your raw video. So not only in a sports context, also family. So, yes, there's just so many ways that kids are being creative. And you know, like Ken said, they're really programmed. They have a lot of things going on. So to find those gigs that fill the slots has you've seen an increase in those as well as the more traditional baseline jobs.
And you can then the kid can set his or her own wages, right? Yeah. So you want your highlight reel, you want this hockey reel taken care of before your kid's a senior, and you're going to pay for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to be quite honest, unless you do it professionally, they're better at it than us. They've grown up in this digital world. And it's really exciting to see some of them be able to leverage some of those skills that they've learned into a real business. That's, you know, that's entrepreneurship. So
Ken, how are these businesses ever going to get lifeguards and camp counselors if you can just, you know, become an expert at hockey reels?
Well, they're going to have to work harder than they have before. And the old days of putting out a help wanted ad just isn't going to work. And you cited a New York situation where they're raising pay to $20 an hour. I'm going to tell you something. That's not going to work necessarily. So what has to happen, and I coach small business leaders on this all the time, is you're going to have a better story. You know, these kids have so many options. It just didn't exist when I was a kid. You just didn't have that many options. And you were all competing for the same options. Now, we've heard several great anecdotes here of what's going on. And so what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to really recruit. You know, I'm a big sports fan. And so, you know, in the world of Division I sports, okay, it doesn't matter what the sport is, recruiting is the lifeblood of the team. And you have to fight tooth and nail. You got to get in people's living rooms to get the best players. And I think there has to be a mindset shift for a lot of these organizations where they need young talent. Okay. But they're competing against their own entrepreneurial goals and ideas and then schedules. And so you've got to get, you know, hands on here. So practically speaking, and this is hard. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs, they push back when I say this, or small business owners, but it's their reality. You know, if you've got a lawn care business, or let's take the pool example. And so you're looking for somebody who's a good swimmer and someone who's responsible, and they've got to go through the certification. So they got to work a little bit in order for you to give them a job. And so what has to happen here is I've got to find who are the right kind of kids, where would I find them? And so I've got to be connecting my local high schools. I got to be connecting with teachers. I got to be finding kids. If I got a lawn care business or maybe I've got a plumbing business and I'm looking for some extra labor help, who are the kids that are interested in shop or working with their hands? Where are those kids hanging out? And I've got to use everything from social media to real life connections, teachers, guidance counselors, principals, churches, civic clubs. I got to go where the kids are, and I got to have a story. I got to have a narrative to say, if you come work as a lifeguard here, let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to pay you X amount an hour. We're going to give you some additional training. We're going to give you a scholarship towards, you know, a certificate or college. I mean, whatever that is, you got to figure out a narrative where the kid goes, that is what I want to do for my summer job. You got to convince them now. You don't just inform them of a job.
And Jason, are you seeing that in your high school classes? Are students wanting to be recruited and find the perfect summer job?
Well, we're having community members reach out to us saying, do you have somebody that would fit this? And we definitely do see that. Something that if you do something right, it's almost like your reputation does some recruiting. And I'll give you an example. Ken had mentioned working at a golf course. There's a local golf course here. There's a couple of them that offer caddy programs. And my son caddies at Brookside Country Club. And they have at least 40 boys and girls in this caddy program. And I say boys and girls, some of them are teenagers. And it's such a great program in that they learned the service industry. They're actually out doing a job. They're carrying a bag. Sometimes they're forecatting. But it's one of those jobs that the better job you do, the more engaging you are, the more somebody tips you. You see it in your bottom line. So with that, that happening, we have a lot of kids from our schools that gravitate towards that. And I actually know a story of a local college basketball player. Who's caddying at Muirfield, and he has his business degree and his parents wanted him to intern, and he convinced him that, you know, the connections that I'm making at this golf course with these people, and I'm making a great check while I'm out here, you know, this could be every bit as invaluable as ABC, and they understood. And Ken's article that he wrote about the summer jobs that we're seeing, he talked about having fun. Mm-hmm. And I think those jobs, kids will be eager to work if they're enjoying what they're doing. So,
Yeah, listeners, the conversation has turned from, you know, teen jobs to entrepreneurship for teens as well. So if you have a story of your teen looking for work or finding work in an interesting way, definitely weigh in and give us a call, 614-292-8513, or send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. We want to hear about your teen's experience with summer work last summer, this summer, and what they are dreaming about as their dream summer job. My first summer job that actually was a real job, not babysitting, I guess, that paid was at an ice cream shop, right? So that seems like a very traditional summer job compared to what we're all talking about.
And there's some local ice cream shops and communities that they have tip jars there, and they do pretty well. You see a lot of that pizza places,
the Sweet Shop Deli in Imperial, Pennsylvania. Yes, but it taught me, you know, it was the first time I was earning my own money. It taught me how to keep my money. It wasn't my parents giving me the money. If I wanted gas in my car to get to the job, I had to have my own money. But then it also taught me responsibility, because eventually they allowed me. I opened the store, or I locked up the store at night. Mm-hmm. That was pretty daunting as a teenager to be like, you're trusting me to lock your store? Why? Right? But is that typical? Are teenagers getting more and more responsibility?
Oh, for sure. For sure. You're really, kids are, and I'm a teacher, I'm biased. They're very impressive. And you're definitely seeing people elevate kids to higher positions at a sooner age, and giving them more responsibility. I know of kids that are shift managers part time at a Subway, so they're good students. It doesn't surprise me at all, but it hits me that they're 17, you know, and they're probably given some direction to people that are in their 20s or something like that. But these students are generally commanding enough where that's not an issue.
Let's talk about the financial literacy piece. Mm-hmm. Ken, what do you think about learning to earn your own money, you know, and what to do with it? How does that impact teenagers, younger age?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. And I think it really dovetails off what Jason was just talking about. So when we teach kids that they can earn their own money, and then they get to decide what they do with their own money, what we're essentially doing is we're giving them a tremendous amount of autonomy, which is what people crave around the world. You know, and just the human spirit craves freedom. Freedom is the fundamental word there behind autonomy. And what happens is, and Jason was laying this out beautifully, he sees it every day, when we as parents back off and we give kids freedom, meaning we give them a job, where they make their own money and then they can spend that money, they begin to experience freedom in its true and purest form. I made it, it's mine, and now I get to decide what to do with it. And so that starts the journey into real responsibility. In fact, the more freedom someone has, the more responsibility they will be confronted with. So the question becomes, do they develop? But we, as parents in America, have gotten so helicopter focused. We're hovering all the time instead of letting these kids experience freedom. And give you an example, I remember over a decade ago, I went to Zambia, and we were serving a village way out in the bush of Zambia. And I think it was my second day, and we were out working, and I just happened to look up for a second to take a break, and I saw what looked like a toddler carrying a baby on her hip. So I asked the village leader, I said, how old is that child carrying the baby? And he just laughed. And I think he gets that question a lot from Americans. And he said, she's five. And I said, well, how old is the baby? He said, probably not yet two. And so it struck me, he said, that's very normal here. And it struck me that a five-year-old, given the freedom, can adapt to the responsibility to take care of. And I mean, she was carrying this little not two-year-old baby on her hip like a little mama and taking care of and watching over this baby. And so I point that out to say, when you talk about financial literacy, if we just allow kids to make money and then we allow them to go screw up and make mistakes with money. Mm. Okay. Nobody writes a check anymore. Mm. But one of the great lessons that a kid could learn in the old days was to bounce a check. You know, that moment of failure in it most of the time will heighten responsibility. So when it comes to financial literacy, I think it's built on autonomy. Give your kids a chance to make and spend their own money. Teach them principles of saving and investing and budgeting. But at the same time, know that the more freedom we give them, the more responsibility I believe that they will develop.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich, and we're talking about teens in the workforce and that first summer job. Listeners, join us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What is the job your teen is doing this summer, and what are you hoping they learn from it? And Jason, let's talk more about that. Jason Savage is with us, a teacher at Thomas Worthington High School's Entrepreneurship Business Academy. And that was Ken Coleman, a career expert and author and host of The Ken Coleman Show. So, Jason, what are you teaching about money with your students? How are you teaching them to know what to do with money?
And I tell you, my class, my personal financial management class, it's great in that every kid's interested in it, because I start off talking about how important the class is, because it doesn't matter what you choose to do professionally. If you plan on being a stay-at-home mom or dad or CEO of a Fortune 500 company, we all need to know how to take care of our money. So they're ultimately engaged. And one of the questions is, how much money should I save? What do I need to save? And I just, my kind of rule of thumb has been, if you save 10% of your gross income for your long-term retirement, just take for every $100 you
make. You're talking about retirement with teenagers.
I am. And they, because the way I phrase it, I say, do you ever want the point to come in your life where you can do what you want, when you want, meaning you set the schedule.
Isn't that what being a teenager is?
Maybe. I think it's more describes what being a retiree could be, right?
Right.
So, they say, yeah. I say, well, that's retirement. So just peel that 10% off the top. For each $100 that you make, $10 of it goes into a savings account. And then after that, I would encourage a conversation. What kind of goals do you have? Half the money they make, they're just gonna spend it. It's gonna go into their gas tank. As Ken said, they should have that. They should earn that, or they should have that freedom. But I say, okay, with that other, you've got 10% that's going to retirement. Half of it is your spending money. Are there any goals? A lot of them, you know, maybe a sophomore, junior in school, they may say, I want a couple $1,000 in spending money by the time I get to college. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe 20%, an additional 20% goes there of what you make. So if they have some kind of goal that is dictating the spending, that really helps them. So,
Ken, are you seeing that parents are just giving their kids too much money rather than having them earn it? Is that the problem you were referring to earlier?
Yeah, I don't have any data, but my spider sense. Can I be honest? Mm-hmm. Even in my house, Stacy and I have to watch this, you know, because again, I got two boys and a girl, and the two older boys are in sports, and so they do have limited time. I mean, they are active, they are working out, they're not sitting around playing video games. And then when they are, and we're seeing that they're hanging out with friends, you know, last night, my big boy came home last night and he came home for about 30 minutes, showered, got some dinner, came out. I was on the back porch. He says, Dad, I'm going over to my friend's house. And there's about eight of them going over to a buddy's house for a pool. I would rather them be hanging out with their buddies, at a good family's house, hanging out in the pool than sitting at home watching TV and playing video games. And so, what we are seeing is this, as these kids are more programmed, there's a tension for parents to be, okay, how do I fund their gas tank? I mean, that's the biggest expense for my oldest is his gas. Mm-hmm. And so he is working this summer. He's working in a sporadic schedule based on his football schedule. But he's worked. We've taught them how to work. They see us work. But yeah, we are seeing parents fund too much of a teenager's life. And so what I mean is I'm okay because I know my kid's schedule and I know he's not loafing. I'm okay helping him with his gas, okay? But when he comes to me and he goes, Dad, I need money because we're all going to Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm not interested in funding his dinner trip to Buffalo Wild Wings, okay? Because he needs to figure out a way to fund his, I want to go to the mall and buy a $50 t-shirt, okay? Well, that's not my responsibility. That's his. And so I think it's that tension point between the gas is one thing. Of course, I'm paying insurance and everything else. But this other stuff where you're just spending freely, I'm not going to fund that. And you're going to have to figure out a way to fund that.
And Jason, what are you seeing with the over programs of the kids? Do your students have room in their schedule for a job?
It all depends. It depends. Some kids, like my son, is a hockey and lacrosse player, and he doesn't play lacrosse in the summer anymore, so he has time in the summer now to really pick it up. There are some kids that are their sports, or if you're a baseball player, you really have a hard time of doing it. It's a good mix. One thing I have really noticed is kids in their off season really try to work to do something. It may be, I've seen kids, because they're so programmed during season, say, I'm not going to work here. I might work every other Sunday for a 4-hour dinner shift at some local restaurant or something. But during the season, I'm going to work on my sports and my school. And in the off season, I'm going to use that to fund my spending money the rest of the year and to really work.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jurevich. And we're talking about teaching teens responsibility and financial literacy and that first summer job. And listeners, if you'd like to weigh in, 614-292-8513, give us a call. And we'll be back in just a moment. I'm Amy Jurevich with All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.
And welcome back to All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. Whether it's lifeguarding, landscaping, camp counseling, or food service, summer jobs for teens can serve as their entry into the world of employment. These first jobs also teach responsibility and financial literacy. We're talking about the best summer employment options for teens and the lessons to be learned in the world of work and financial literacy this hour. And joining us for the last two segments was Ken Coleman, a career expert, author, and the host of The Ken Coleman Show. I neglected to say goodbye to him, so goodbye to Ken. in and still with us is Jason Savage, a teacher at Thomas Worthington High School. He has been teaching business classes for nearly 10 years. And listeners, we'd like you to join us and tell us about either your first job, your first summer job as a teen, or what your teen is doing this summer. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And another, not my first job, but my second job I had, I worked at a drive-in. It was called Dependable Drive-In, which was a very interesting job as a teenager, working very late at night. You're allowed to miss the curfew with the license if you're working, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, but I got to watch movies.
That's a good gig.
Right?
That's a great gig.
Yeah. So what do you think about... Jason, why don't you tell us about what one of your first jobs was?
Sure. I like Ken talked about before, I was pre-work permit. So my first job, I was 12 and carried the Columbus Dispatch. That's back when it was an evening newspaper. My last day was the day before it became a morning newspaper. But I did that. But the first real job where I showed up every day was I started as a dishwasher and then moved to be a server at a local retirement home. It was independent living, and the residents would come to the dining hall, and there were a bunch of students that it was a 4-hour shift. You'd get there, you'd set up dinner, you'd set up all the food, you'd serve them, you'd clean up afterwards, all that good stuff. And it, like I said, it was a 4-hour shift, and it was really a great life experience to spend so much time with the seniors and stuff like that, and to learn how to talk to different people. And it was an excellent experience. And I was working with some peers, and like I said, getting to meet some of the seniors and to learn at that age how to deal with people of all different ages was really valuable as a high school student. So I enjoyed that. And then summers in high school, I worked at a country club pool. I wasn't a lifeguard. I usually would be the shift was 6 a.m. to noon, and you'd get there at 6, you'd throw the pool cleaner in the pool, and that you clean the bathrooms, get the pool all set up for the day. And then the great part was it wasn't easy to get up that early, but the great part was you were done at noon and you had 6 hours in. So it was good stuff.
That was something we were talking about in the last segment, the idea of shorter hours. These kids aren't going to work an 8-hour shift. Right?
I very seldom see more than a 4 or 5 hour shift anymore, except if it's a situation where there's a little more motivation than a summer job and your own spending money. Other than that, those jobs usually stay at 4 to 6 hour shifts. Yeah.
And we have a call from Benjamin in Dublin. Benjamin, what would you like to tell us about summer jobs?
So my son started working about like two years ago. Oh, by the way, big fan. I'll listen to you all the time. But what I wanted to say was that I implemented a 20% rule for him when he first started working. Basically, he pushes carts at a local grocery store. And when he started making money, what I would do is I would say, okay, here's 5 different categories that you should put 20% in. And then that way you can start managing your money effectively. You know, knowing full well 20% is not like really viable, you know. So, but
it's better
he's
than
following
nothing.
It. He's been saving up some money with it, and I found it to be a great kind of learning thing.
All right. Well, thank you for that, and we hope that your child is, you know, doing very well this summer as a cart getter, right? Thank you for that call, Benjamin. And listeners, if you'd like to join us and tell us about a first summer job, what you hope it will teach your teen, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Have you had to talk with any businesses about them needing what they need to do to attract employees, being teenage employees?
In terms of that, that would be something worthwhile. They haven't asked. They usually ask us, do you have any students that would fit this? I actually think that would be a wonderful approach for businesses. Now, what I've found is the local businesses, the locally owned businesses, like Villanova and Worthington and JT's, they are so good at hiring. It's almost like the next class of kids. When kids graduate and move on, they're backfilled with a sophomore or something like that. And the kids know that, hey, you want a job at Villanova hostessing and that, or being a server because you're tipped well. It's a great community place and stuff like that. So those local places really get it. And I think the bigger franchises and stuff like that, they're making an effort. But I think that would be a really better suited way would be to come to the high schools and to, you know, guidance counselors and say, what should we do to make kids interested in coming to work for us? In addition to the pay. Yeah.
And we have Clark joining us now, Clark and Lewis Center. What would you like to tell us about a first summer job?
Well, I just wanted to follow up because I heard Mr. Savage mentioned how his first job was working at a dishwasher, and that was my first job. My parents encouraged all of my siblings to get a job in the food industry because it teaches you respect. It teaches you how hard people who work in this industry really do. And you can really tell there's a lot of people, you just learn to appreciate the hard work of others. And I'm still working inside restaurants 13 years later.
And you can tell people who have never worked in a restaurant versus people who have worked in a restaurant,
oh,
I bet.
Very much so. Very much so. And I love the kids who come and they work under me for their first job. And it really kind of teaches them. It humbles them. It teaches them, hey, this is how the real world is. And if you want to be nice to strangers, it makes everyone's life a little bit easier.
Great. Well, thank you very much for that, Clark. We appreciate your
thank
call.
You.
Thank you. And so what we were just talking about the idea of what Clark mentioned, respect in the food industry. So you're talking very passionately and affectionately about your students. You mm-hmm. love your students. Mm-hmm. Does the job teach them to be more respectful? Do some of them need that?
There are... when you have a paycheck motivating them, most kids, if there's a rough edge, that'll get polished, right? when they realize, hey, if I'm better to this person, that might benefit me. It's kind of the Adam Smith invisible hand theory. While trying to do well for your own self-interest, you're actually having an impact on people around you. The kids do realize that. And actually, like I said, I'm you're accurate in describing how I feel about my kids. I feel like when they're in front of me, they're already pretty respectful and stuff like that. But that professional setting does make them realize, you know, there's a whole time and a place to behave a certain way. When they're in the workforce, that kind of emphasizes, all right, this is a time to, like I said, you know, your phone's got to stay in your pocket for a while. You're not answering every snap or every text. It causes them to rise to the occasion, and the vast majority of them do.
And we have Martha with us from Marion. Martha, what was your first summer job?
I was a trail guide with Jungle Larry's Safari Island in Cedar Point.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Which basically meant that I had to keep, answer people's questions and pick up litter and keep them from trying to feed the baby elephant inappropriate things. And it was a great job. It was lots of fun. I'm afraid it's not there anymore because Jungle Larry is long gone, but Cedar Point probably still hires.
Right. And what was it like? What did it teach you working in a place like a busy place like Cedar Point?
It taught me the how important it is to work with good people.
Mm. Okay.
Because it was a good team.
Thank you very much for that call, Martha.
Okay, thank you.
Do you find your students, that do they want to work with their friends or can they, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're going together to these places and saying, you have to hire all three of us.
Yeah. What happens more often is one gets in there and they start to, if they do a good job, they'll say, hey, do you have any other friends? And then, you know, their friends are applying kind of sequentially after them, and then before you know it, you know, there's a bunch of them in there. One thing that I'm also seeing students do is and these summer jobs can be a great way to see what they want to do for the long term. Like, if you have joy around a golf course, do you want to try and get in that industry? If you have joy at a restaurant in the food service industry, is that something you want to pursue? Our business program, actually seniors are able to intern during the school year, and they and they get exposure. So we've actually had students that have had summer jobs at Worthington Industries that have been paid jobs, kind of getting them into their kind of starting to form, you know, what they're going to do with do long term. So
are you having enough businesses come to you looking for employees that is there such thing as a summer job fair? Is that still a thing?
Yeah, our counselors do a summer job fair. Mm-hmm. They did one just this past spring. It was wonderful. And I think that's something that local businesses or anyone that's listening that needs employees, the high schools are where you're going to find it. And they're where you're going to find the connections as counselors, as teachers, coaches. If you are friends with a coach and you say, hey, I need a host or a hostess. Do you have any kids that might be good at this? The coaches, the teachers, the counselors, they know. And then I think the other part of it would be those employers should be asking the questions, how else can we reach these kids?
And the last caller, she was talking about working at Cedar Point. Mm-hmm. Do you have students who are working at the zoo here, Zumbezi Bay?
Yeah, I've had a couple students mm-hmm. work at the zoo for sure. Actually, I have a part-time gig. I'm an off-ice NHL official. I'm in the penalty box for half of the Blue Jackets games. And one of my coworkers down there is semi-retired, and he works at the zoo. So it's not just kids and their summer jobs. You get as adults as well.
So in your class, mm-hmm. it's a you have an entrepreneurship business academy, mm-hmm. right? So you're teaching them values, but what do you teach about entrepreneurship? What are you trying to teach them there?
So entrepreneurship, the thing that we're trying to teach them in that class, that's their senior year. And what we're trying to show them is your traditional vision of business may not be your path. We talk about the key to entrepreneurship is finding a consumer need and filling it, right? And sometimes you create a need. Like Guy Kawasaki, when talking about Steve Jobs, says Apple isn't in the business of giving customers what they want. They're in the business of telling them what they will want. So if you're you can either do one of two things. You fill that photographer space where there's a need now, or is there something else that you can bring, a creativity that I didn't think I knew I needed for my kid's wedding, but I suddenly do. So.
And we have Patrick. Patrick's on the air from Sunbury. Patrick, what was your first job?
Hi. My first job when I was, I think, 15 was baling hay and mowing grass.
And what did that teach you about the heat of summer?
Oh, my gosh. So it taught me that I absolutely hated baling hay. Mm. So no, to never do that again. But I learned a lot about myself, learned patience. In many ways, you know, mowing grass takes time and attention to detail. So I actually enjoyed doing that. And just as far as baling hay, you know, just waiting for the day to be over so I can officially quit. I learned too.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that call, Patrick. We appreciate you joining us. And do you have some students in your class who take a job and they're like, this was not for me?
Yes. I do. And there's one actually that comes to mind for me. Summers and winters, my uncle had an interior contracting company where I hauled drywall and did ceiling tile, and I was a laborer. And I remember I had around a 3-point GPA after my freshman year. And then I spent that first summer working for him, and they put me on all the roughest jobs. They wanted, mm-hmm. It was not cushy. It was hard, much to what the last caller was saying. And it was amazing how my grade shot up after that, because I realized I didn't, that was not for me. That was going to be too difficult for me. There are some people that I worked with during that time that are carpenters, and they had amazing careers and did stuff like that. But that was just way too hard for me. Student wise, one comes to mind that she's really introverted, and she went to work for Chick-fil-A, and you talk about being in different environments.
Chick-fil-A likes you to be chatty.
They do. And she's hung on with it now. She started to find another job that suits her interests a little bit more. So she has two of them, and she'll phase out. But I was really proud of her, because Chick-fil-A was out of her comfort zone. Like you said, they prefer you to be, it's customer facing, and they prefer you to be chatty. And she did that. She liked it, but I think she found something in an art store where she's spending some more time. So,
All right. Well, I want to say thank you to Jason Savage. Thank you for being here, the teacher at Thomas Worthington High School's Entrepreneurship Business Academy. Thanks for talking about summer jobs with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I also want to say thank you to the All Sides staff, which includes senior producer Marcus Charleston, assistant producer Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz. And then thank you to our interns who were very helpful to me this week, Evan Clark and Nicole Nowicki. Thank you, Evan and Nicole, for all your help and your work on the shows. And this is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. Thanks for joining us.